The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozell Live by Dr. Tom Rozell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozell, and indeed we're live. And got to start out the program simply by saying a very, very blessed and happy Easter to all of you who are celebrating today. It's a day that is very special, particularly, you know, in my life, being Sicilian and having grown up in that atmosphere. But I want to extend to you the blessings that go along with this day, and hopefully that our future becomes much better because of it. We have a very special program today, one that, you know, many of you are outside and you went out to play a little golf today, or you played a little tennis, or you're just walking around trying to get just a little stretch, or you're, you know, trying to walk around up and down stairs and you're saying, my feet are killing me. They're not working the way they're supposed to. I have this neuropathic pain. You know, my feet are swollen. They hurt. They throb. I can't find any way. I went and put orthotics in them, and it doesn't help much. Well, maybe they were the wrong ones, but that's needless to say. So here's the deal. We're going to talk about that, and I'm going to share the platform with somebody who I have tremendous admiration and respect for, somebody who knows mechanics of the body probably better than most, and one that you've heard of and have listened to so many times over the years, the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. Welcome, my friend. Happy Easter.
Hey, happy Easter to you, Tom.
Yeah, you know, this is a fun topic, and fun meaning that it's fun and interesting to walk through the mechanics of this thing, but it's not fun for people who have foot and ankle problems, because if your feet aren't working, your whole body feels awful, and it has a ramification from, as they say, the platform all the way up to the top of the head, and can cause all kinds of symptoms. Let me ask you just kind of a generalized question. Why focus so much on the feet? You know, is it the feet that are the problem, or is it something else that's the problem?
Well, I mean, like you said, the feet are basically the platform for the rest of the body. So if you look outside the boxes of the foot itself, sometimes we develop aches and pains above the ankle that we can't explain. Well, very often that's driven by a poor foot mechanics, maybe on one side or both sides. So, you know, the feet are extremely important outside of just having pain in the foot or the ankle. So I look at it more and more with my patients that have chronic problems that certainly weren't induced by any kind of injury.
So, you know, there's arches of the feet, and everybody goes down to the corner store and tries to buy something that will support the arches, or they go to a doctor and they have arch supports put in. But they're done sometimes in a very aberrant, in my opinion, way where they don't settle in. But we're going to get into, you know, the why of supports later on. But the question for right now is simply this: is our foot problems simply a lack of support in the foot, or do we have to dig in much deeper to find out what's really causing them? And then, you know, the short answer that we'll get into in the long view is it fixable?
They are absolutely not a primary lack of support. And that's the danger zone. Most people assume if they have foot or ankle pain that they need to prop their foot up. Well, if the person already has a decent arch, and let's say that arch is semi-rigid, and you need to understand that the foot goes from being relatively supple when it's not touching the ground to becoming very rigid as soon as your heel hits. So if you don't lack the ability to be supple and then be rigid, then just putting an arch support in there is many times just going to reinforce the problem. So you got to be very sure that the person needs it and is actually going to benefit from it.
I want to remind our listeners, we're here at 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Give us a call. If you got bad feet today, here's a great time to ask an expert, Dr. Harlan Browning. And, you know, I have tremendous admiration for this guy. I'm always going down the hallway when I see him and say, hey, Dr. Harlan, what's the deal with this? He always has an insight, an intuitive thing that makes life a whole lot easier. Let's take it from, you know, differentiating from a mechanical problem to a physiological problem of the foot. You know, how do you distinguish the difference? We hear all kinds of advertising about neuropathic pain, and it can be a diabetic neuropathic pain. It can be some other type of neuropathy that's taking place. But when do we know that it's mechanical, and when do we know that it's other than mechanical?
Well, there's certainly definitely some overlap between physiological causes, like you said, the diabetic neuropathy or vascular insufficiency to the foot. But, you know, for the most part, folks usually suffer from mechanical type injuries or mechanical type issues. So that would be the plantar fasciitis, the heel spurs, the neuromas, the metatarsalgias, and those types of things. So to differentiate, typically when it's a mechanical issue, there's provocative factors. The person will say certain movements or, you know, putting pressure here or there makes it worse. Where if it's a neuropathic cause, be it, you know, diabetic or vascular or some of these metabolic causes, there might be a subtle increase in the discomfort, but it's almost universally always kind of there in the background. So I use that as one of my determining factors, whether I want to go a little bit deeper into the metabolic side, maybe checking for the blood sugar or checking for vascular response, as opposed to just purely looking at a structural construct as far as what the foot is doing right or wrong.
You know, it's amazing to me how many people come in. There was a professional basketball player that came into the office, and this goes back years and years ago, and we won't talk about his name, but it's so long ago. It's when the Wizards would call the Bullets. And so this guy came in, and he was a guard, and he was missing all kinds of games because he was getting these micro fractures within his feet. And, you know, obviously he's up, he's shooting, he's coming down his feet, he's breaking them and so forth. The interesting piece, and this is what I wanted to follow up on, what I found with him was that he was getting these micro fractures because he was losing calcium from the bone simply because of the fact that he was drinking a liter of Coke every day. The phosphoric acid was driving it out of them. We stopped that. We were able to support the feet, and they healed up over a period of time. Question is, how much of what you see relative to foot pain and incapacity is a result of somebody's aberrant dietary patterns that can cause that type of situation to occur?
Well, I will certainly say this, and I'll lump restless leg syndrome into this as well, because, you know, typically we feel it from the knee down. I definitely see a lot of folks that have been diagnosed with restless leg syndrome have a tough time either absorbing or getting good forms of calcium or magnesium. So then what happens is they develop what's called fibrillations, where the muscle is twitching so millimetrically that you can't see it. So it feels like something is walking or moving underneath of their skin. Also, I'll see that a lot with people who have diagnosis of plantar fasciitis. They're more or less just getting chronic cramping of the muscles, the intrinsic muscles on the bottom of the foot. So you definitely need to look at the diet when it comes to things like cramping or weird type of neuropathic type of symptoms, you know, feeling of twitching or feeling of crawling. That, to me, I start thinking about a calcium or a magnesium metabolism problem.
So that's, you know, that brings up an interesting situation across the board, because so many patients do come in and they have the symptom presentation that you're beginning to describe, and it can be quite disabling. You know, in particular, they're laying in bed at night, positions really don't change it much, except it may get worse, you know, doing certain types of things, but it's always present. Now you have to distinguish the need for calcium opposed to other mineralizations, correct? Mm-hmm. So how do you distinguish from a professional platform somebody who comes in and they have the muscular fibrillation, they have other things going on, and it's magnesium this time, it's calcium another time? Are there distinguishing characteristics, or is it a guesswork?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a guesswork, but, you know, to illustrate how often it could be just brushed off as not an issue, is I see people over and over again who come in and their blood work, their calcium score in their blood is fine. And they bring in their calcium supplements that they take for their bone density. The two things that you need to understand is the body's going to keep the blood chemistry in extremely tight value at all times. So by the time we develop a functional problem, it might not be represented in the blood chemistry. So we can't really use that to determine calcium scores or calcium load in a muscle tissue. And the second thing is people take copious amounts of calcium for whatever reason they think they should, not to mention it's fortified in cereals and that type of thing. But most of the issues with those calciums are they're biologically not as available, like calcium carbonate that comes from basically stone.
Right.
So the person is loading their body with all this calcium that they can't absorb or utilize. So then they've got to excrete it. So typically we think obviously through the urine or feces, but sometimes it can be deposited in tissues. So that's the kidney stone person. That's the gallstone person. That's the person that starts to develop, premature arthritis in the knee. These people are pushing calcium out of one area into another. So I don't use blood work typically as a metric. Because most of the time it's in normal range, and certainly you have to look at the type of calcium that you're taking, because if you give them just a small amount of a good form of calcium, I like specifically something called calcium lactate, because in my opinion, it has a greater affinity for muscle tissue than it does bone. 200 milligrams of that can make a profound difference in a day, where the person maybe have taken 1500 milligrams for 5 years in a row.
And nothing's working.
Nothing's working.
Yeah. Calcium lactate is the most absorbable, as you said, and it has to be obviously balanced with a little bit of magnesium to make sure that there's transport going on. But, here's the situation. You get people that have these presentations and there's calcium depletions and the blood work is fine. So their physician tells them there's no problem there. So let's get into a little bit more about a pain pattern. Let's take it from, usually we go from the feet up. Let's take it from the waist down. How often do you see foot problems and ankle problems, calf problems, if you will, that start as a result of the low back not being mechanically correct?
I would say it happens more than most people would realize. Certainly when we compress a nerve in the low back, it can refer pain, like a sciatica, right? So we compress the lower lumbar spine and we get pain down the length of the leg. So that's a real thing that we see ongoingly. And additionally, that nerve that goes from the low back, it's called a mixed spinal nerve. It carries both information for sensation. So that's the numbness component. And it also carries the motor portion of it. So it allows muscles to contract. So sometimes we don't really have a pain situation. We have a weakness issue that comes from the low back. So a person might have weakness in the small muscles in the bottom of their foot because the nerve impulses are not getting there. So over time, they develop an overuse injury. And you could call that a plantar fasciitis or what have you. But the real root cause is just this slow, progressive lack of input to the muscles that causes them to weaken. And then they become overused. And then we get X problem. You can figure out there's hundreds of problems from weakness in muscles, and plantar fasciitis is a classic.
Well, when we get into the second half of the program, I want to get into some diabetic neuropathic problems. I want to start distinguishing these things, but also the things that can be done. But we're going to get back to that. We're going to talk a little bit more about those structural problems after this message. We have to break. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, one of the best in the business. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle live on this beautiful, beautiful Easter day. So I hope you're outside enjoying it and celebrating the gloriousness of this special time. We just went through a blend, if you will, of Christian Holy Week and Jewish Passover, and I hope it was a very, very supportive time for all of our families. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about foot, ankle, and calf pain. And, those things that nobody really knows how to get a fix on. But here's a guy who, over the years that he's been with me, I know that he can fix it. I've seen him fix them. We do it on a regular basis. Let's finish up a little bit, Dr. Browning, and welcome back on the mechanics from the waistline down and what happens with the feet and muscle control and so forth. You said a little bit about sciatic pain, and that's an expression of a pain pattern itself. It's back leg pain or sometimes to the outside of the leg pain, but it also has motor function. So my question to you is, can a problem with the pelvis and the low back that does not have a pain pattern associated with it cause enough muscular inhibition, weakening, lack of expression, if you will, to cause the mechanics of the foot not to be work, shouldn't, they don't work the way they're supposed to.
Absolutely. There's just no doubt. I mean, it can be purely neurological. The nerve is being irritated, be it in the low back, or you can, nerves can be entrapped as they course down the length of the leg. So there can be entrapments in the hip. There can be entrapments in the thigh, behind the knee, in the ankle itself. We've all heard of carpal tunnel syndrome. Well, guess what? There's something called tarsal tunnel syndrome. It's an entrapment of the nerve in the ankle. So yes, nerve compression can cause lots of weakness patterns that we don't know are there, because we're not talking about profound weakness like a drop foot. Is that possible? Yes, but that's typically, we know when we have drop foot, but most people have subtle weaknesses in their feet. So unless you are testing those muscles and isolating them, it's often hard to know that they're there.
We're here at 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. If you have a question on this or anything else, give us a call. Happy to talk to you. And if you're outside walking around, check those feet out. See if they're bothering you, and then get on that cell phone and give us a call. Dr. Harlan, let's talk a little bit about the mechanisms of walking. And here's an interesting thing. And there was a patient, this goes back probably about 6 months ago, and I was treating them for foot and ankle problems. And as always, I look over, I check the patient, I watch them walk. And I said, does that hurt you when you're walking? He said, no, only when I put my shoes on. And I've tried 1,000 different types of shoes. So I'm looking at these shoes that this woman was wearing, and they're block heels, but they were, you know, 2.5, 2¾-inch block heels. But there was no support. You could see there was a tremendous amount of flexibility. So my question to you is this, taking that aside, and that was her problem, how often do we end up with foot problems because people insist on buying stylish shoes and shoes that are not supportive?
All the time. And when you listen to my my webinar, I must mention it like 15 times. So either the person is in a shoe that is not appropriate for them, or it doesn't fit right. So you need to look at that. You know, high heels cause the person to be in what's called plantar flexion. Their foot is pushed slightly down. Well, that causes over time the calf muscle to shorten, and then it restricts the normal motion in our ankle. And that's not good, because we need that motion to propel ourselves when we walk, and certainly to help us slow ourselves down when we move. And then there's just some people who buy shoes that they like, but they're just not designed for them. You know, the toe box classically is too narrow. So what do the people do? They double dip by getting a poorly fitting shoe and then getting the next size up, which by default will have a bigger toe box. The toe box is, you know, what goes around your toe. So if it's too narrow, it's going to squeeze your toes in. Okay. And that's not good, because that's going to cause neuromas and metatarsal problems. So now what they do is they upsize the shoe because they really like the look of it. Now the toe box is wide, but the shoe doesn't fit well. So now they don't stabilize the back part, the rear foot, which is, you know, where all the magic happens, as we say in the biomechanics. If we can't stabilize the heel, then we're not in a good place.
I think that's a diagnosis of vanity. And so many of us get ourselves into that, whether it's even, you know, I love wearing cowboy boots. And years ago, I used to get the boot with the head, the narrow toe and toe box in there. And I said, you know, my feet were killing me, and I couldn't figure out why they were hurting me so bad. And I sat there, you're supposed to be aware mechanically of this stuff. And I realized it. So now the only time that when I wear a boot, it's got a big wide toe box in it, so I have support in it. But we see this on such a regular basis. It's unfortunate, and it's so simply fixed. But there's a story that as long as shoemakers keep making those type of shoes, we keep funding the retirement fund. Anyway, we'll be right back after some very important messages. My guest today is Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about your aching feet and the things that you can do. We come back, we're going to talk about diabetic neuropathy and things of that nature. Don't go away. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, we are today on this absolutely gorgeous Easter Sunday. Hope you're outside having a good time and enjoying all kinds of special things in your life and your world today. We have a very special program, and I have a special guest, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. We're talking about something that unfortunately affects way too many people, and it's called foot pain and foot and ankle pain, and we can crawl up your calf, and that's affected as well. And the causes, but, you know, this is very treatable. And if you have any problems with this or anything else today that you'd like to know something about, please give us a call at 888-630-9625, and we'll be happy to address it and take your call. Listen, I want to also remind you that this presentation that we're talking about, foot and ankle pain, will be available to you this coming Wednesday. So all you have to do is go to rosellecare.com. That's rosellecare.com. RoselleCare.com and register for it. It's free. There's no cost to it. It's our gift to you. It's the way that we help you help yourself. So go to RoselleCare.com and register it. We will send it to you and you'll be able to view it in the privacy of your own home. And those of you who've listened to Dr. Browning in the past know that his presentations are amazing. If you aren't computer friendly, simply call the office at 703-698-7117. And ask them to put you on the list, and we'll be more than happy to get that out to you. Dr. Browning, welcome back. Let's talk a little bit about diabetic neuropathic pain, and then I want to get into treatment just a little bit, because it is very treatable, but it takes a multidimensional approach. So let's start with distinguishing the difference between my foot hurts and you've got a diabetic neuropathic problem that needs to be addressed differently.
Well, you know, typically that person is, you know, they're going to have elevated blood sugar. They're going to have A1C. In other words, this person is most of the time has had diabetes, and hopefully it's being treated, but a lot of times it's not treated. The issue becomes this when we have elevated blood sugar and the blood sugar can't get into cells to be utilized for energy or, you know, stored in the muscles and in the liver, then it's got to go somewhere. And unfortunately, it likes to gunk up nerves. It likes to get into our retinas and our eyes. It likes to go to the kidneys. So a process takes place called glycation, where the sugar actually will bind with a protein, and it makes it really tough to separate them. It's more or less what happens when you caramelize something. So if I was to take an onion and I'm going to put it in a pan with some butter, the butter would be the protein, and the onion has sugars in it, then it takes on a sweet type of taste or composure. And that's because the protein is binding to the sugar. So the same thing happens in our nerves. And then when they become gunked up, then odd things happen. The nerve starts to talk, and it often talks in languages we don't understand. So that's the numbness, the tingling, or maybe just the feeling like there's something under your foot, like a ball under there.
It also can be extremely painful, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So my question, and I'm sure that our listeners have the same type of question, is that does my blood sugar have to be really high for this to happen, or can it be a marginal situation, or one that we're just not getting transport into the cell, so it starts gunking up, using your terms, other tissue, and these tissues happen to be the nerves of the feet?
It certainly can be a marginal situation. We're kind of at the threshold of being too high. Each person's physiology is different than the next person, and they're going to have different types of, presentations. And that's why there's, you know, one person can smoke a pack of cigarettes or two packs of cigarettes a day till they're 95, and they're perfectly healthy because they're blessed with good genes. But then there's those other people who, when their physiological threshold becomes slightly askew, then bad things happen to them.
So here's a question that a patient asked, and I'll never forget it because, you know, I was taken by the fact that the patient was intuitive enough to ask the question. You can have foot pain due to a lot of different things. One is accumulation of uric acid, which often is the big toe, but it can be the foot and the ankle just generally. So when a patient comes in, other than chemistry, how can you distinguish pain due to blood sugar problems, diabetic neuropathy, and something like a uric acid presentation? Is there a way, if it's in the ankle, if it's in the lower part of the foot?
Most of the time, if I suspect that there's a metabolic cause like gout, like you're describing, then I'm gonna check the uric acid level. And I touched upon this during the presentation. There's lots of folks walking around with subclinical gout and actually have flares of gout. If that wasn't the case, then the drug manufacturers wouldn't pay to advertise for medication on TV for gout. So there's obviously a lot of consumers out there. Now, does that make it right or wrong? I mean, that's an ethical kind of question. But what I'm getting at is people have poor diets, and the end product of their poor diet in many cases is gout or other chronic inflammatory types of situations. So we speak a lot about inflammation and acid-base balancing and those types of things. So for people who have global transient pain, you know, one day it's my hip bothering me, the next day it's my bum shoulder, the next day it's my back, you know, those people typically have higher levels of inflammation. So we need to investigate that. And it can be done through, you know, blood work, or you can look at the pH in your saliva or your urine. There's definitely good metrics to follow that. But for the most part, there's a lot of people who are walking around out there that are smoldering fire.
How common is it for something like a diabetic neuropathic presentation? The blood sugars are in that borderline. They're in that pre-diabetic pattern. You know, they're at 5'7", 5'8", into that area, maybe 6. And they have a subclinical uric acid problem. And they can have both, because it's often seen together, where the uric acid level's at 6.5 or 7. How often can you see destruction of joint spaces when these levels exacerbate and remit, on, unfortunately, on a regular basis?
Well, you definitely would see it in gout, because gout literally destroys the joint space if it's left in place for long enough. Now, a neuropathy really doesn't involve per se a joint space problem. Now, the joint space problem can complicate it, that's for sure. But I think what it comes down to, most of the folks that are suffering from neuropathies, diabetic or a vascular insufficiency that's causing it, or combination of the two, it's mostly older folks. So getting back to what you said about borderline levels being out of range, well, the issue becomes this: as we get older, we just don't recover as fast. Our immune system is not as competent. So that marginal out of range level, it becomes much more irritating to the system, because we can't clean it up, or we can't wall it off or do something with it. And that's classically why we see it more often in older population than as compared to, let's say, a 35-year-old person.
So let's go to the crux. When you have a problem like that, let's deal with the diabetic neuropathic problem, because most people will recognize that as, my feet are killing me, they hurt like heck. And what's the fix? Can you begin to reverse this? And, you know, and what's the procedure? How many different aspects do you have to incorporate to begin to turn it around? And is the fix permanent?
Well, there's no magic bullet. So most of the time that there's going to be a multidisciplinary approach. So if the person really does have high blood sugar, they're going to have to do something about it. So they would have tremendous benefits with sitting with somebody who specializes, a dietitian or a nutritionist who specializes in, you know, blood sugar control. There's certain nutrients that help the body utilize glucose. So that's one section of it. If the nerves are so inflamed and gunked up from the excess glucose, then there's therapies that you can do to target those, cold lasers and percussion and those types of things. And if the person is generally just deconditioned, which in many cases they are, because they don't want to walk, then the physiology becomes even more compromised. So then you're going to put into place exercises and different types of therapies to improve their physical nature, because most people with neuropathies become progressively less active because they don't trust themselves on their feet. And in an older population, the concern being that we're going to slip and fall and maybe break a hip.
You know, it's really frightening, if you will, when you see how, in my opinion, so much of these neuropathic instabilities, if you will, are out there. And there's a tremendous amount of people don't even realize that they have that that situation and say, well, you know, that's not for me, meaning that they're going to push away from an activity that they would like to do, but they don't trust themselves. Those are usually indicators that there's something going on. You know, they look at their feet and they start seeing tissue changes where there's going to be skin discoloration, some hardening, almost like a leathered type of look of the skin. And but we're talking about things that have come about long term, and that can be your neuropathic problem from the low back going into the feet. It can be the diabetic problem that has not been resolved at a very low level over a period of years. They take a look at the big toe and they start developing this bunion on the toe. That's often nothing more than gout. And it comes and goes, depends on what their lifestyle is. So when you've put these things together, it's a combination therapy, as you said, to be able to resolve these, but you have to know which one is which to be able to fix it properly and to keep it at bay.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, again, if there was one specific therapy, we'd be utilizing it. So most of the time, what's being done in medicine is they're just trying to calm the nerve down, gabapentin and, you know, all of these other things to treat the nerve that's firing. Well, if the nerve is firing because it's so inflamed and irritated from the blood sugar, then at minimum, you need to at least try to reduce that blood sugar level and reduce the inflammation in the nerve. If not, then you're going to have to increase your gabapentin or bring in other types of medications to make yourself feel better. But that comes at a cost. So I don't think that that's a great long-term strategy.
Now, it's truly what we, you know, what we preach in the office and looking at any condition, but particularly in these situations where there is a lifestyle habit that has to be altered, supported differently. You know, we look at the structural portion of the body dealing with the neurology. We look at the biochemistry and all those things that affect the body. We talk at exogenous things from the outside in, and then the processing of the mind. That's where the biggest problem comes in so many cases, the inability of the mind to control habit, if you will, and having an effect on those other two considerations. So I know that, you know, I've seen you treat so many different types of extremity problems, and you're really a magician sometimes when it comes to these foot problems and these foot and ankle problems, because you truly appreciate the mechanisms of gait and the effect that they have on the body. What distinguishing characteristics would somebody have that, you know, you talked a little bit in the first part of the program about calcium problems when it comes to muscle cramping and inability, but there's another piece, fascia itself. What rules fascia? That's your wrapper. What makes a difference in this foot and ankle mortis problem when it comes to, you know, the fascia not being, it doesn't have the integrity that it should? Where are the issues there?
Well, in most cases, the problem becomes the fascia becomes too restricted. And inherently, the fascia is very restricted by nature because we want it to be like that. But if it actually becomes more tight, like almost like a shrink wrap, then that becomes counterproductive in our ability to move and ambulate and do all those types of things. So we have these long pathways of fascia that start, you know, basically from our head and go all the way to our toe. So if this fascia becomes too shortened because we sit a lot or we don't move very much, we don't stretch, then we're going to become extremely rigid, which is by default going to change the way that we move. And then ultimately we have to adapt to our poor movement patterns. In my presentation, I talk about certain things that need to really happen to have good gait. And one of those is you have to be able to have good mobility in your ankle. Your big toe needs to be able to extend. And in reality, you need to have good extension of your hip. So if you don't have that, we're going to have issues.
We're coming up to a break, and we do have a caller that we're going to try to be able to take when we come back after this short break. Unfortunately, this program goes way too quickly for important topics like this. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live. My guest today is Dr. Harlan Browning, and you will be able to hear him as your presenter coming up this Wednesday evening. Don't go away. We'll be right back after some important messages.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozell. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozell live, as you do every Sunday at 11 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Make sure you tell your friends about it and go to our website at rozellcare.com. If you want to see what we're doing relative to teaching, you go to Dr. Tom Rozell, drtomrozelle.com. Check that out. You can always follow us on Facebook. We're all over the place, and we're there to give you the most important information that we possibly can. Want to salute and thank our men and women in service. You guys keep reaching out. We keep giving you the data that you want. Thank you for what you do, and thank you for continuing to support our way of life over anything else that is secondary and is way behind us. We appreciate you, and we love you very much. My guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning, we're talking about feet problem. We do have a call, and I want to take that. We have a short segment coming up here, but I think it's an important one. Charles, thank you for calling. You're from Silver Spring. How can we help you, sir?
Yes. What effect does PEMF mats have in relation to neuropathy?
Doc, you want to jump in there? The PEMF mats, there's one. I've got one in my house, Charles. It's called a Beamer unit, and they're expensive. The good ones run north of $5,500 to, you know, up to $6,000. They increase the circulatory pattern within the body. Doc, feel free to jump in anytime you want to.
Yeah, I mean, they've been classically used a lot for treatment of non-union and bones. So in other words, when people are just really slow healers, maybe after a fraction, or they use it in spinal surgery, then it promotes bone growth. So it does show promise in certain situations. But it's like anything else. You want to look at the manufacturer, make sure what they're claiming is actually, you know, taking place and that type of thing.
You know, Charles, like I bought one a few years ago, and because I had a few issues that were going on in my body, and I wanted to shorten the time frame that I had to get through the process, because I had to work, I had to see patients and so forth. So when it comes to increasing vascularity and mobilizing fluid within the tissue, it's actually a pretty good unit. It's got a lot of track record behind it relative to its capacity and its ability to work. I wouldn't go out and buy one just because. If you have one, it's going to make a difference. But if you're being treated by a doc, ask them their opinion. If it would be something that would be go hand in hand with how you've been being treated, it works well with diabetic neuropathic pain. But it's more of a supportive pattern, in my opinion, than it is as a primary choice. So bear that in mind. It's a good piece of equipment. It's very expensive. I wouldn't buy one just because I want to try it out, unless you can rent one. There are some people who that do rent them, and you can see if it makes a difference for you. Vascular compromise, loss of circulation, the little spider veins that you get in your feet. It does do a very nice job with those types of things. So if you want to increase circulation, potentiate the healing process, it's a good support mechanism. Dr. Browning, you have a program that you're going to offer this week, and our listeners can grab a hold of it by simply going to our website at rozellcare.com. They can call the office, either one. What's in it?
You know, we're going to cover all things foot and ankle, but we're also going to look upstream from the foot and ankle. I'm just a big proponent of people understanding the why behind their problem. So we're going to certainly touch on the, you know, anatomy concepts, biomechanics, and that type of thing. And then I went through and I broke down, I picked out about 6 or 7 of the common foot or ankle problems. There's certainly more, but I picked out the common ones, and we look closely at the mechanisms involved and what we can do to alleviate and ultimately correct it. And we're going to talk about the pitfalls that people get themselves into, specifically the ill-fitting shoes or getting an orthotic when it's not appropriate.
You know, it's such a wide open topic. And I only say it in this consideration. There's so many things that can affect the foot, the ankle, the calf area. And it's not just necessarily localized. We talked a little bit about back problems affecting the whole area. We talked about your shoes affecting the way your feet are. We talked about neuropathic pains. We talked about the formation of uric acid crystals that can get into the joint spaces. In today's world, one of the things that we didn't talk about is the microorganisms, and I'm not talking about viral patterns and so forth, although there are things that like Epstein-Barr virus and rotaviruses and so forth that like to live in cartilage, is in any joint space. But you have so many different things, and you can't just treat things as a broad brush. There's no one, and I think this is what you were trying to say, Dr. Browning, there's no one approach. You have to look at it multidimensionally.
Yeah, I mean, the outcomes are going to be much better when you approach it from that angle, for sure.
So, you know, if you have a foot problem, if you have an ankle problem that just hasn't gone away, you spent in many cases probably thousands of dollars trying to figure it out, check this out. Go to rozellecare.com. Ask them to send you the webinar so you can listen to it in the leisure of your own home. Share it if you'd like to. It's our gift to you. And you're going to hear from, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best in the business, Dr. Harlan Browning. That's why we lovingly call him the professor, is simply because this guy is amazing when it comes to his breadth and width of information and his ability to apply it as well. So go to rozellecare.com, register for the program. We'll send it to you. And as always, you know, if you need to talk to Dr. Browning and you want a question answered even before you come in, call him. He'll reach back out to you. Dr. Browning, as always, it's super pleasure. I love conversations with you, whether they're in the office or on the air like this, or just simply when I text you back and forth. It's great having you with us. We're coming up to the end of the program. And as always, the reason that we do this is only one reason only. It's because we love you all. See you next week.